Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design. I'm your host, Todd Butterfield. On this episode, I have a double treat. Two recent essays on Darwinism by longtime Washington journalist Tom Bethel. The great contemporary novelist Tom Wolfe described Bethel as one of our most brilliant essayists. The two essays you'll hear today are adapted from Bethel's new book, Darwin's House of Cards, A Journalist's Odyssey Through the Darwin Debates. The book is available now at Amazon. The first essay is from the American Spectator, spectator.org, where you can read more of Bethel's fine work. The Lord's Day, meet Darwin Day, and shudder. Charles Darwin did what he could to hide his materialistic worldview, but we know what he was up to. The international celebration falls on a Sunday. Look for theistic Darwinists to reassure churches that Charles Darwin believed in God, or at least that his theory of evolution harmonizes beautifully with Christian theology. The reality is more complex. In The Origin of Species, Darwin suggested the idea of a God who created a few original forms and let the laws of nature govern the outcome. It is just as noble a conception of the deity to believe that he created a few original forms capable of self-development into other and needful forms, he wrote, as to believe that he required a fresh action of creation to supply the voids caused by the action of his laws. But later he wrote privately to friend Joseph Hooker, I have long regretted that I truckled to public opinion and used the Pentateuchal term of creation. And in 1862, he told Harvard botanist Asa Gray, there seemed to be too much misery in the world. He could not accept, for example, that a beneficent and omnipotent God would have designedly created digger wasps with the express intention of their feeding within the living bodies of caterpillars, or that a cat should play with mice. For Darwin, it always came back to the problem of pain. What a book a devil's chaplain might write on the clumsy, wasteful, blundering, low, and horribly cruel works of nature, he wrote to Hooker around 1856. Wounded pride also may have played a role. In his autobiography, Darwin recalled that while on board HMS Beagle, he was heartily laughed at by several of the officers for quoting the Bible as an unanswerable authority on some point of morality. So he reconsidered the Old Testament and later described it as a manifestly false history of the world, with the Tower of Babel, the rainbow as a sign, etc., etc. The Bible, he concluded, was no more to be trusted than the sacred books of the Hindus or the beliefs of any barbarian. Gray told Darwin that he didn't see why they couldn't have both Darwin's theory of evolution and a role for a designing intelligence. Darwin would have none of it, but realizing that a thoroughgoing materialism wasn't an easy sell, he actively concealed this aspect of his thinking. In one notebook, he reminded himself, to avoid stating how far I believe in materialism. Darwin promoted his materialistic worldview indirectly by supporting the principle that science should invoke only material causes. According to this methodological rule, you needn't be an atheist to do science, but you should only offer hypotheses consistent with atheism when doing science. Call it methodological atheism. As he told geologist Charles Lyell, I would give absolutely nothing for the theory of natural selection if it require miraculous additions at any one stage of descent. This methodological dogma is in full bloom today. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment. A commitment to materialism, wrote Harvard geneticist Richard Lewontin. Moreover, he added, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. One doesn't hear much about the materialism of Darwin and Darwinism, likely because there has been a long-standing effort to ignore and suppress it. Many of today's theistic Darwinists play this game, but they are hardly the first. So, for instance, Darwin's mounting hostility to Christianity was suppressed by his widow, who removed some inflammatory comments from his autobiography. The following passage was not generally known until restored by his granddaughter Nora Barlow in 1958. "Thus disbelief crept over me at a very slow rate, but was at last complete. The rate was so slow that I felt no distress, and have never since doubted even for a single second that my conclusion was correct." Rumors of Darwin's deathbed conversion are without basis. Darwin put his faith in mindless evolution and lost his faith in God. It's a shame. Almost 160 years after The Origin of Species appeared, the case for intelligent design is stronger than ever. The origin of the first animal forms in the Cambrian explosion, the origin of the first microscopic life, the cellular world of sophisticated molecular machines, the origin of a finely tuned universe from nothing, each is part of a march of discovery since Darwin's day that has taken us further and further from a world empty of final meaning and deeper into one charged with the grandeur of some extraordinary design. That's something worth celebrating this Darwin Day and every Sunday. That was a Tom Bethel essay from the American Spectator, but I promised a double feature. Here's the second Tom Bethel column, this one from another news and commentary site, The Stream. You can find it by typing stream.org into your web browser. This is titled, "At Age 180, Darwin's Theory of Evolution, a Materialist House of Cards." Little known fact. The year 2017 is likely the 180th anniversary of Charles Darwin's theory of evolution. If that number sounds high, it's because while Darwin had worked out his theory of evolution by 1837, he didn't go public with it until 1858. Why the delay? Evolution itself wasn't the problem. Earlier in the century, it was openly discussed. Darwin's own grandfather had broached the subject. The problem, according to paleontologist Stephen Jay Gould, was that Darwin's theory of evolution was distinguished from others by its materialism. Previous writings on evolution were softened by a reliance on vital forces, organic striving, teleology, and the like. Not Darwin's theory. It argued that even the mind was nothing but a special configuration of matter operating under blind processes. "No notion," Gould wrote, "could be more upsetting to the deepest traditions of Western thought than the statement that mind, however complex and powerful, is simply a product of brain." So, to be acceptable to his contemporaries, Darwin's theory needed a climate of opinion more favorable to materialism, one that didn't exist in the 1830s. Indeed, throughout Darwin's youth, materialism had been actively repressed. Lectures were proscribed, publications hampered, and professorships denied. "Fierce invective and ridicule appeared in the press," wrote Howard Gruber, author of Darwin on Man. "Scholars and scientists learned the lesson and responded to the pressures on them. Sometimes they recanted, and sometimes they published anonymously or delayed publication for many years." In one notebook, Darwin reminded himself to avoid stating how far I believe in materialism. A generation later, the landscape was more favorable for materialists, and for those committed to materialism, Darwin's theory was a lifeline. After all, if materialism is true, then something like Darwin's theory must be true. Complex organisms do exist, after all, so molecules must somehow have whirled themselves into the far more complex structures we find around us, whether bacterial or human. That also necessitates a finely graded series of structures gradually evolving from relatively simple molecules into one or more single-celled organisms, and from there into multi-celled organisms, the first plants and animals, and so on. Armed with materialist creed, the true believer is prepared to reject contrary evidence. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs, in spite of its failure to fulfill many of its extravagant promises of health and life, in spite of the tolerance of the scientific community for unsubstantiated just-so stories, because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism, Harvard geneticist Richard Lewontin frankly admitted, in the New York Review of Books. Moreover, he continued, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. Thus do they rule out of the court of science everything that doesn't fit their materialist ideology. Notice where this leads. If mind is just a special configuration of brain cells, then mind is nothing but matter. How can neurons decide to do one thing rather than another? Nerve cells can't make decisions, so materialism repudiates free will. The consistent materialist sees this, denies free will, and dismisses consciousness as a delusion. Our sense of self is a neuronical illusion, said Jerry Coyne, a fully paid-up materialist and author of Why Evolution is True. Molecular biologist Francis Crick said the same thing. Your joys and your sorrows, your memories and your ambitions, your sense of personal identity and free will are in fact no more than the behavior of a vast assembly of nerve cells and their associated molecules, he wrote. Or, as he put it more succinctly, you're nothing but a pack of neurons. How deeply do materialists believe this? Notice that many of them grow outraged at public intellectuals who reject Darwinian materialism. But why the outrage if beliefs, ambitions, and will are nothing but a pack of neurons? On that view, the person skeptical of Darwinism can't help himself, so why get outraged at the poor fellow? The materialists might concede that their outrage is irrational, a byproduct of evolution, the fight-or-flight mechanism run amok. But that explanation opens a can of worms. If mind is a byproduct of an evolutionary process that maybe saddled us with various irrationalities, why trust human reason? Why trust it to lead us to the truth about biological origins? In my decades as a journalist covering evolution and interviewing some of the world's leading evolutionary thinkers, I have found that materialists have no good answers to this question, or to many of the evidential challenges that have endured and grown since Darwin's time. For me, the conclusion is inescapable. Modern Darwinism is built on a foundation of sand, a house of cards threatened even by the outraged huffing and puffing of its defenders. It's time for a rethink. Both of today's Tom Bethel essays are adapted from his excellent new book, Darwin's House of Cards, A Journalist's Odyssey Through the Darwin Debates. Bethel has been covering the ID and evolution beat for decades, and during that time he has interviewed some of the world's leading evolutionary scientists. It's such a readable book, and Bethel has a brilliant mind. He was trained at Oxford University. Here's what Andrew Ferguson of the Weekly Standard had to say. As a journalist, Tom Bethel is fearless. As a storyteller and stylist, he is peerless. All his gifts are on generous display in this fascinating and admirable new book. Go check it out. Darwin's House of Cards. You can find it at major booksellers like Amazon and at discoveryinstitutepress.org. Buy it for yourself or buy it to give to a friend or family member confused about evolution. For ID the Future, I'm Todd Butterfield. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.